This is chapter 3 of the book Why Bother with Jesus by Michael Green, written for those who don't read religious books. There are 12 chapters in this short book of about 60 pages. And this is chapter 3, Bother Because He is the Ideal. Are you old enough ever to have seen the legendary Pelé play football? He drew thousands to the stands whenever he played. His artistry was supreme. He was perhaps the greatest attacking footballer the world has ever seen. The ideal, if you like. Soccer may not be your thing. What is? If it's literature, would you not give a lot to spend a few hours with William Shakespeare? If it's politics, you'd learn such a lot about leadership from Augustus Caesar. We have approximations to the ideal in every walk of life, but they all have their failings and they fade as the years pass by. But is there anyone who is the ideal not merely for football, literature, or politics, but for living? Is there anyone who has shown us what humanity is really capable of? Is there an ideal man? Not so long ago, it was fashionable to believe that we were developing towards a race of supermen. The ideal lay before us and close at hand. Now, in the light of increasing world famine and pressing environmental uncertainty, such optimism seems particularly dated and almost laughable. Just look at all those old Star Trek films to see what I mean. These days we vaguely hope, if we hope at all, that the ideal will come from some inner spiritual philosophy or New Age experience. The ideal still lies before us or within us, but it is no longer close at hand. Yet we are all busy looking in the wrong direction. The ideal has come. The perfect life has been lived. We are no longer able to plead ignorance of what it means to be fully human. In Jesus, the real historical Jesus, we see the heights to which man can rise. In him we see perfection. Take the life of Jesus as recorded in the Gospels. It is so superb and yet so unexpected that nobody could have made it up, let alone four evangelists working independently from one another. That life is perfect. There's no other word for it. The heading of the next section is Think of the Influence of That Life. Wherever you look in art, music, and literature, you find that many of the greatest compositions have concerned Jesus of Nazareth. Think of medicine, education, and humane government. There are places in the world, the very few of them, where atheist regimes are to the fore in these three areas. But in every instance, the first people to bother about the bodies and minds of men as well as their souls have been the Christians. The ideals of Jesus have not always been followed in Western Europe, but those ideals have shaped what Europe is. This is also the case in Australia and in both North and South America. In Africa, the biggest single cultural influence is Jesus, and the growth of the church far outruns the growth of the population of that whole continent. The next section, think of the appeal of that life. It has fired the idealism and touched the hearts of all types of people all over the world, all down the centuries. It has appealed equally to bosses and to servants, to soldiers and to monks, to Stone Age cultures and to sophisticated professors. It has appealed to downtrodden and to prosperous alike. And it has never done so by condoning their failings or feeding their self-esteem. Always that life has challenged men and women, even as it has appealed to them. A most uncomfortable ideal, but all nations of the world and all types of men and women within them have confessed that he is the ideal. Not only has there been no better, it is impossible to conceive of any advance on Jesus of Nazareth. Next section. Think of the balance of that life. The perfect balance between action and reflection, between masculine virtues and those generally associated with women. The mixture of gentleness and toughness, of compassion and straight talk, of gaiety and seriousness is phenomenal. Here was a man who was as much at home in a hovel or a palace, with a penitent call girl, a truculent fisherman, or a selfish governor. And incredibly, he is always quietly in command of every situation, perfectly balanced. The last section of this chapter is called Think of the Inspiration of That Life. The life and example of Jesus have sustained the persecuted believers during the first 3 centuries, acted as a beacon to the monks in the Dark Ages, tamed the cruelty of the Vikings, conquered the conquering Normans. Just see how many churches they left all over the place. Christ was the inspiration behind the gallantry of the knights in the days of chivalry. A rediscovery of Christ led to the Reformation. In the 18th century, the vision of Jesus, Jesus only, so dominated men like Whitefield and Wesley that the whole face of England was changed inside a generation from brutish, drunken atheism. In the days of the Industrial Revolution, too little attention was paid to him and too much to prophets. The bitterness in industrial relations to which this led is still with us. But even so, the trade unions were founded largely as a result of Christ and his influence and ideals. Jesus stands behind the Tolpuddle martyrs. It was he who inspired a worldwide missionary movement in the 19th century, which fired men to go and tell the heathen about the Saviour, even if they should themselves perish in the telling, as many of them did. It is Jesus to whom many of the liberation movements of the 20th century are looking for their inspiration. Jesus, the non-establishment man, the man for others, the leader who gave his own life. If you had asked Gandhi, the father of modern India, who was his model, he would undoubtedly have replied, Jesus. There are in fact signs at present that both Islam and Hinduism are looking to Jesus as in some way the ideal human being. The truth of the matter is that there are no serious competitors. Jesus is their ideal. Is not that a very strong reason why you should bother with Jesus? He is not merely the greatest man ever. He is the ideal for everyone to follow. Wouldn't you think then that people would crowd round him, aching to be his followers, just as fans crowd around a star? But they don't, do they? And they didn't when he was around on earth either. Now isn't that a very odd thing? Does it not suggest that we are terrified by the ideal? We are afraid he might want to change some areas of our lives which are not ideal at all, but which we cling on to for all we're worth. So it's much easier and safer and more comfortable to turn our back on him and say, why bother about Jesus? What's so special about him?